This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, three stand out, which help maintain your healthy blood sugar: glucose management with berberine, glucose balance, and chromate. These botanical supplements can play an important role in proper insulin function, normal energy production, promotion of healthy body weight, and maintenance of healthy blood sugar levels that are already within the normal range. Their ingredients are backed up by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to talk to Marty Whittakin, who's a board-certified clinical nutritionist. She's a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine. She has her very own radio program, HealthyByNatureShow.com, which virtually assures us of a smooth broadcast, because there's nothing like two radio hosts talking to one another. There won't be a lot of dead air. Marty is also author of a couple of great books, the best-selling Natural Alternatives to Nexium and Other Acid Blockers, and her latest book is entitled The Probiotic Cure. So, you know, it's likely that our conversation is going to range towards discussion of the microbiome. It's always fun talking to Marty. Marty follows the scientific literature avidly, as I do. So welcome, Marty. It's nice having you back on Intelligent Medicine. How are you doing?
Oh, great. It's always a pleasure being with you. And the only danger with two radio hosts is fighting over the talking stick. Not so much dead air, but we would both have something to say.
We're both a little bit of gas bags, but you're gracious enough to yield the airwaves to me pretty often, because I think you have a good sense of how to pace a radio program. As I do, because one of the rules of radio is you got to let the guests talk, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So I won't step on your lines if you won't step on mine. To make this a more timely broadcast, I mean, we're headed towards a season which is kind of a perilous season for a lot of people. It's colder, the days are shorter. Also, the holidays are looming, and when the holidays loom, it's like we start this nonstop potlatch, which lasts just about until Lent. I guess there's a reason for Lent, because after 3 months of putting on the feed bag, it's time for some dietary rectitude. But, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up, and that's a big feast day, and then there's like the Christmas parties, and then there's Christmas itself, and then there's New Year's, then there's the bowl games, then there's the Super Bowl. Each and every one of those is a pretext for eating a lot of stuff. And, you know, we wonder, you know, why do we come down with all kinds of illnesses? You think maybe there's a connection? Is it just that germs like the cold weather?
Yeah, it's kind of astonishing in a way that never comes up. There's just this pious announcement that now we are at the colds and flu season, so get your flu shot and sneeze into your sleeve and stay home when you're sick. I mean, some of that's good advice, but why is there a season? Well, the first thing that comes to mind, of course, is, well, we're not out in the sun as much, so maybe we're low in vitamin D.
Important issue, yeah. For a lot of people who don't take supplements, their only source of vitamin D is that sun exposure. And then maybe they get a whopping dose of vitamin D, you know, in August. But by the time November rolls around, their vitamin D levels are plummeting, right?
Yes. And people who have tests twice a year, their blood levels are much higher in the early fall than they are in the spring. And so that's one obvious thing. Yes, maybe we're crowded together a little bit more, but I think it's the change of diet. And of course, all these the Sugar Fest that starts when you're testing the Halloween candy and lasts through Valentine's Day. We know the sugar is very hard on the immune system, shuts it down for hours at a time. But I've been recently thinking that maybe one of the other things is when we leave the summer behind, we maybe don't eat as many fruits and vegetables, and we get into the fall, yep. and these heavier foods maybe aren't feeding our microbiome as well. And if that's where 70% of our immune system is, something's going on there.
Well, yeah, I noticed the effect at my local supermarket where I can, you know, sometimes get organic berries. I try to dose myself with organic berries on a regular basis, look for every opportunity to have them. And, you know, try not to eat too much fruit, because if you have fruit out, you know, that's a lot of sugar. But the berries, you know, have a therapeutic effect on the brain and on the immune system. And I try to get organic because we know that berries are generally pretty heavily sprayed. But, you know, in the summer, the berries, you know, you can actually score a real coup by getting a box of berries for maybe, you know, here it's Manhattan, so we're talking Manhattan prices. $3.99 is a good price. Then this time of year rolls around and it's $6.99, $7.99, $8.99. It's like, well, I think I'll just skip the berries and just go right to the caviar counter, you know, and order some of that. I'll have some beluga caviar instead, because it might end up being cheaper. That is a factor too, because we're not getting as much fresh stuff. Although, you know, I got to say, things are improving in the U.S. I remember, you know, bleak winters of, you know, decades ago, where you get some really limp-looking produce under cellophane. And there were slim pickings in midwinter.
I don't know if it's so much the availability as it is people's preferences.
The demand. The people have awareness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked salads just don't sound as good when it's cold out. And if people don't have a big repertoire of cooked vegetables that they know how to do, or maybe have frozen some berries during the season or whatever, they're just, you know, now it's the mac and cheese season.
Yeah. I mean, the comfort foods come in big. And then, of course, the sweets. And, you know, and I really think there's sort of a kindling effect, because, you know, Halloween sort of kicks it off. You know, it's a sort of a sugar-laden holiday. And, you know, the less you have, the less you crave. And once you kindle those cravings, it's really an addiction. And, you know, the more you have, the more you want, you know, and pretty soon, you know, you're binging out on all those Reese's Pieces that are left over.
And it works the other way, too. I recently decided to just really get serious about upping my vegetable intake, and even thinking of ways to have vegetables for breakfast, and having a big selection available that I can steam up for lunch and so on. And now I crave vegetables. And so I think part of that's got to be you've educated your gut. We know it works with yeast, that when they take over the gut, they send up their lunch order for more sugar.
It's like the invasion of the body snatchers. They commandeer your brain. I mean, the studies actually show that, you know, what inhabits your GI tract may literally send signals, you know, perhaps via the vagus nerve, to parts of the brain that favor the very fuel that promotes their growth. You know, it's a kind of a perverse thing. It's like we think we're in the driver's seat, but actually what's inside of us may be determining our preferences.
Well, exactly. There, I think of my dog. Well, tell me for sure that no, he wants a dog biscuit, or he wants what's on my plate, not at all interested in something else. And they will tell you, well, these bacteria, among the thousands of things that they make, they're little factories of chemicals, most of which are good for us. They are amino acids or neurotransmitters or things that are of benefit to us when they digest our foods. They also have a very strong will to live and have become accustomed to creating some signaling substance that makes us want what they want. It's kind of crazy, but it sure works that way.
I mean, when my patients used to say, you know, the yeast made me do it, I used to kind of roll my eyes. But, you know, now I'm paying attention because studies actually show that your intestinal balance may skew your food preferences. So, you know, coming back to fundamentals, you know, we used to think that, you know, fruits and vegetables, you know, healthy foods are good for us. High fiber foods are good for us because they have secret ingredients, you know, and we can name some of these ingredients, you know, things like resveratrol and tyrosyl bean, you know, and on it goes. You know, there's literally hundreds, if not thousands, of these compounds that, you know, work on heart, brain, arteries, you know, speak to our immune system. But now, we're coming into awareness, especially over, you know, the past decade or so, that these foods, these spices, even cocoa and coffee and tea, feed our microbiome in such a way that the microbiome confers health benefits on us. Can you elaborate a little bit on that theory? Because I know you've done a lot of work on you know, the adverse effects of acid blocking medications and the benefits of probiotics. What's going on there?
It's one of the things that I became more acquainted with when I was writing the probiotic cure. It takes something like pomegranate, and the palm people that make the pomegranate products would love to be able to make claims if the FDA would allow them to.
Well, they ran into a buzzsaw with the FDA. They expended, I think, millions of dollars fighting the FDA to make, you know, truthful health claims, but the FDA, you know, just shot them down.
Well, even if they could make all of those claims to be really truthful, it isn't so much the pomegranate, it's what the pomegranate is made into by the bacteria. Mm-hmm. If you fed a sterile gut pomegranate, you would not get anything like that amount of benefits. And there are studies showing that with a lot of these things that we view as superfoods or as healing foods, it's what the bacteria turn it into, digest it and turn it into, that has a real benefit. And so we've got to save them a place at the table and realize that we're eating for trillions.
Indeed. You know, so there's a lot of a whole bunch of studies that are coming down the pike that emphasize the importance of the microbiome. So, you know, let's discuss some of them that have been in the news lately. Irritable bowel syndrome and fecal microbial transplants, FMT, it's abbreviated sometimes, that IBS can be addressed through fecal transplants, but only, here's the key, from a super donor. Now, we don't quite know how to, you know, select for super donors. I guess you got to get lucky. But at least conceptually, kind of that paves the way for super probiotics that may be designed to mimic the intestinal flora of super donors.
That fecal transplant is kind of a yucky concept that most people won't get too excited about.
Poop pills, yeah.
They can use an oral tube, or they can use enema, which was done back. My first recollection of that, other than the Chinese who have done similar kinds of things, they're always maybe millennia ahead of us in some of these things. But back in the 30s, fecal transplant was used for depression and fairly effectively, I think. Anything, though, that doesn't involve a patented pharmaceutical drug quickly falls out of favor, and probably not so much because it's not effective, but because it just isn't profitable or well accepted. But it's the taking of the contents of, as you say, a super donor, somebody who's really healthy. And what worries me about that is how many conditions don't show up for 10 or 20
it's really
years.
It's hard to screen. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's hard to screen for it. But with the animal studies, it's been just really illuminating that they can take the intestinal contents from a skinny mouse and put it in a fat mouse, and then those mice become skinny and vice versa. The same with mice that are shy and I don't know how to tell if a mouse is depressed, but anyway, mice with mood problems, they can swap and change their mood strictly by changing what's going on in their gut. That mm-hmm. should really tell us something.
That's really proof of principle for the judicious use of probiotics, because they're the best tools we have at this point. Well, research is proceeding apace on fecal transplant. For me, fecal transplant is a little bit like Russian roulette. You know, you can get lucky, or you can sometimes develop serious problems. You know, on that note, there was a story recently about a new Alzheimer's drug that was developed by the Chinese. Now, this is in contrast to a new Alzheimer's drug developed by an American pharmaceutical firm, Biogen, which is a monoclonal antibody. It's going to be very expensive. Everybody's very excited about it. It's supposed to prevent amyloid plaque. But it's not even that likely to achieve approval by the FDA, because so many drugs like it have crashed and burned in the past. And besides, it would be super expensive, tens of thousands of dollars a year. The Chinese, however, have harnessed seaweed to provide a neuroprotective effect via feeding the microbiome. This is a newly approved drug in China, not available here, but it's basically a form of seaweed that fosters beneficial changes in the microbiome. It's mind-blowing, because here we're talking about Alzheimer's, the ultimate challenge, and we're back to the microbiome in terms of influencing neuroinflammation.
I hadn't heard that. That's fascinating.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, no, I'd love to see that. One other thing on fecal transplant that I should have mentioned is that you're talking about the risk-benefit ratio and why that's kind of scary. Where they've had the best luck with it is people who are headed down the path toward seeing light, and not in a good way, with C. difficile, the intractable mm-hmm. yeah. diarrhea condition, usually acquired in a hospital after they're given lots of antibiotics, but they're going to die from it. The fecal transplant has a more than 90% cure rate and brings them back.
And that is an approved therapy. That actually, you can get yeah. that at major hospitals now, because it's the only way to go. I mean, it used to be that antibiotics had at least some partial efficacy against Clostridium difficile, but now so much antibiotic resistance, they you know, pretty quickly they go to fecal transplant.
Right, that's a case where the risk-benefit, you're going to die, so the benefit's yeah. pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just a casual thing like, okay, let me see if I can lose some weight. I'll take a poop pill. It may work, and it may not. Don't try this at home, please, folks.
But seaweed, that sounds pretty safe.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's in the news. I'll send you the latest dispatch on that. In another study, they looked at autoimmunity. And in particular, you know, the diseases that kind of resemble lupus, you know, this whole family of diseases that, you know, severe autoimmunity, they attack various organs in the body. And they actually traced it to altered intestinal permeability, leaky gut syndrome, and the passage of certain bacterial species into the bloodstream that then trigger an autoimmune reaction. Bingo. Hey, we've been talking about that for, you know, for a real long time in functional medicine.
Oh, yeah, a decade, maybe multiple decades. The idea, first of all, was laughed at, that there could be leaky gut, that the gut lining certainly couldn't allow anything to pass because that's against the rules. Well, right. You and I knew that that was happening, and that's the most likely answer to. Aren't there something like north of 100 autoimmune diseases, and pretty much they all have this same quote around them, no known cause, no known cure?
Really? Mm-hmm.
And so, well, what is so unbelievable about maybe it's coming from something in the gut, getting into the bloodstream where it doesn't belong, and annoying and confusing your immune system.
Yeah. I mean, that's going from, you know, science fiction to kind of mainstream theory now about autoimmunity. So from a practical standpoint, I know you're a big proponent of probiotics. You know, what role might they play in keeping people healthy this holiday season? Is there evidence that probiotics support immunity and help reduce the risk of, say, you know, ordinary respiratory infections?
Oh, yes, quite a bit. It reduces the incidence of upper respiratory illnesses and the duration. Pretty much anything that you want to have improved, you can find a study on that. When I was doing the book, the probiotic cure one, I've looked at over 1,000 abstracts, and what kind of hit me the most was, wait, these are coming from journals in every aspect of medicine, the psychiatry, the kidney journals, lung journals, every journal. And that's because they have such broad effects, and they know that thin people have a different assortment, and that when they're given probiotics, the assortment changes in fat people and they become more like the thin people. We're, I think, just at the beginning of understanding all of the various types, and it can get very technical, all these family names, the species, but some of the fundamentals that we're learning are very useful to people without having to get into all that.
Right. I mean, I think there's a great race going on, and even some biotech companies are doing a deep dive on, you know, very specific species that may have functional benefits vis-a-vis diseases. So you may, I mean, in the future, we may see probiotics versus urinary tract infections, for example, or probiotics versus diarrhea, or probiotics versus constipation, or probiotics versus even depression, and, you know, on and on, you know, maybe even autoimmune diseases like MS. I've seen some research on that. But these companies are, you know, high-tech companies. They're going to go for probably FDA approval after, you know, clinical trials. That may take a long time, and ultimately they may not even reach the marketplace. So, you know, what's our recourse in the present time? I know you have a favored approach to this.
Yeah, not only make it take a while, but once they're starting to be treated like drugs, then nobody else will be able to make claims about it, even though there's, in a way, nothing proprietary. I probably have that bug in my system, and you do too, but once they have proven a connection like that, they can make a claim, and then nobody else can after that. The prices skyrocket, the availability goes down, you have to have a prescription. So I think my approach in the meantime, maybe one day those will be useful to us, but in the meantime, just keeping the whole microbiome as healthy and diverse as possible makes the most sense. And two main ways to do that, the same with our overall health, which is feed them everything they need to be optimally healthy and try not to gum up with the works with things that hurt them.
Indeed. And in terms of, and this is something that I've been doing, you know, my mainstay probiotic is more like a fermented food. It's Dr. Hira's probiotic. Can you tell us about that?
It's the only one that's like that. And it really, I wish there was another category to put it in, because any comparisons between Dr. Hira's, which is indeed a fermented food, it's a concentrate of many fermented foods. They take 12 well-researched strain of bacteria, and over a period of 3 years, they feed them all these superfoods and things that we should be eating and too often don't. And those bacteria learn to live together. And when it's encapsulated, they not only have some of the leftover food supply, which are the prebiotics, they have these probiotic bacteria. They also have hundreds, maybe more than 500 of the things that the bacteria have made out of that assortment of superfoods that they've been fed.
And you coined a term around that, which is kind of ingenious, and that is
postbiotics.
Postbiotics. So this is a good point at which to pause, because I want to, you know, do a little deeper dive on that concept. Yeah, we know about probiotics. We know about prebiotics, even. Prebiotics feed our good bacteria, but postbiotics, that's an intriguing concept. Dr. Ahira's probiotics deliver postbiotics, and we're going to find out why that's important to our health with today's guest. She's Marty Whittakin. She's board-certified clinical nutritionist. She's author of The Probiotic Cure and also Natural Alternatives to Nexium. She's got a program. It's Healthy by Nature Show. The website is healthybynatureshow.com. And tell us about your free e-newsletter as well.
Once a week on Thursday, I don't have time to pepper anybody with buy this, buy that. I don't sell anything, so I just do an educational newsletter once a week, and I give links to the podcast as well as places where we're in, I don't know, 31 radio stations across the country, but I think as many people listen online or by one of the other electronic media, so I preview what's coming up in the show the next week, that kind of thing.
Great. Good stuff. All right. We've shared suggestions for guests as well. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Our guest, Marty Wittekin, will be right back. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.